Part 2. How do we get learners to know?
Learning, it seems, is a complex process. We've been told that we can't speak new understandings into a learner's head. Both Socrates and Miller have suggested that previous learning often blocks new learning. What then can we do to move learners towards new understandings? I spoke to Ronnie and his colleague Jill Bradbury, who is also one of the authors of this module, about what they would do.
My argument would be that novel understanding, if you like, or new understandings, the origin lies in action. If you're faced with the riddle, well, the one that I posed earlier, the fact is people acquire new understandings. Every new understanding had to arise from somewhere. So that does happen. By the same token, people sometimes struggle with new understandings. And if you can't talk understanding from one head into another head, what can you do? An alternative argument that overcomes the difficulty of, well, you proceed from the familiar always to the unfamiliar. An alternative is to reverse that and say one way for people to acquire new understanding is actually to start off with the unfamiliar. In other words, with an unfamiliar action. The role of the teacher is to provoke the learner to produce an action. Now we can think of actions as actual happenings in the world or as actions as happenings in the head, right? So it doesn't really matter which way. Now in the process of engaging, of acting, that produces a result. The result that produces is the understanding. Take the example of a pair of scissors. Imagine trying to explain to someone who's never encountered a scissors what a scissors is. You know, it would be a very long involved, and it's highly unlikely that the learner would have a very clear understanding of what this is, as opposed to the almost instant understanding, you know, from discovering it by action, right? So now the fingers are there, the blades expose themselves. It's only, again, a very short time, I think we can imagine, before someone's going to put, you know, a leaf or something between those two blades and snip, snip, and there the new understanding emerges. Now you need to extend that example, obviously. The point of the example is to show that action is an extremely powerful medium, or means, if you like, of learning. And really to show that through action, you don't need to proceed from the familiar to the unfamiliar. You can proceed from the unfamiliar in order to arrive at the familiar. In other words, by acting on the scissors, and by making the scissors act, if you like, the understanding of what a scissors is revealed. So what then happens at the end of the encounter, the learner's encounter with the scissors, is understanding what that thing is. And that understanding has arisen not by any previous familiarity. I mean, really the point is to show that one way to overcome the problem of how new understanding is acquired is not to try and do it by talking, by using familiar concepts and so on, but rather by getting the learner to engage in an action, the outcome of which reveals the understanding.
So, action provides a space for learners to think, to guess, to suggest solutions to problems. It allows learners to see things in new ways, to realize their mistakes, and to practice the new ideas they are learning. Take a short break now and think about these ideas. Let's go back to Jill and Ronnie. Listen to them as they explain what they believe a good learning experience is.
It's a notion of particular kinds of action as opposed to spontaneous discovery. So that seems quite different to a discovery model of learning. I think what's important is that the idea of action as producing understanding, that really what we're saying is not, it's in fact contrary to the notion of a discovery-based kind of activity-based learning. Because this teacher, in this kind of conception of learning, is a very active person. The teacher has a role that is about producing certain conditions for action and is quite directive. enabling particular sorts of action to occur and changing the way in which learners might spontaneously think about a problem.
The teacher in discovery learning tends to be rather passive, you know, may set up something to be discovered. What Joel was painting was a very active teacher. Now, what was meant to be the point of my example wasn't a kind of passive discovery learning, or not even passive, but a kind of blind discovery learning. On the contrary, what I was trying to say is that the scissors is like a very active regulator of your actions. Just that there isn't a human voice standing there saying, do this, do that. Joel's point that the teacher is very, very active in the sense that the teacher does a lot of pushing, if you like. Pushing and pulling, but not talking in the sense repeating the point over and over, but rather saying, think about this, think about that, think about this. But the this, that, and this is not the content. If you think this thought and this thought and this one, the concept that you're trying to get the learner to understand will emerge rather than saying the concept.
I think if you take like an example of a learner trying to understand the meaning of a poem. There's one way in which you could do it, and that is simply for the teacher to say the poem means X, Y, and Z, and to produce a kind of a prosy summary of the meaning of the poem. The learner may be able to memorize the meaning of that poem and reproduce it in an exam. That will not mean that the learner has understood the poem, nor that the learner will be able to apply that understanding to another new poem, but rather that the teacher's role would then be to get the learner to identify particular points in the poem, whether it's to find points of comparison between two disparate objects, and in that process of comparison to understand the meaning that the author is trying to convey, whether it's to find juxtapositions within the poem or to get the learner to pay attention to a particular word and why that word was selected, for example. So it's to drive the learner's engagement in a particular way, to get them to act on the poem in a new way, which will produce the understanding, as opposed to telling the learner what the poem means. There's a very clear move away from the conventional teacher who stands at the front of a classroom and tells learners what they need to know. And there's been a kind of like move away from memorizing information. So that framework seems to have been replaced by something which emphasizes activity for activity's sake. That if learners are active in a classroom, working in groups, making a noise, doing things, that in and of itself will deliver learning. And I think that what we're saying is that is not the case. That those kinds of activities may do little more than allow learners to use with their previous understanding. So if previous understanding is inappropriate, or limited in some way, it will only allow them to act in particular ways. So the role of the teacher to me seems to be to create particular opportunities for learning, and that's something that requires a great deal of attention to the design of a task, as well as attention to the pre-understandings that learners would bring to that task.
Action and experience are therefore vital to good learning. But as Ronnie and Jill say, it must be used in a very particular way. Random experience or unguided discovery, they suggest, does not teach. To conclude, sit back and think a little about these questions. What kinds of experience or action are educational? And what role does questioning and guessing play in learning?